Hello, and welcome to this episode of the Zeitgeist Tapes, where we talk about how politics meets popular culture. It's, as always, it's myself, Emma Burnell, and I'm joined by Professor Stephen Fielding. Hi, Steve.
Hello, Emma. Hello, listener.
How are you?
Fine, thank you. After a few weeks being on strike, advancing the cause of the revolution, or just keeping hold of my pension, depending on what your perspective is. But yes, everything's fine here.
Well, it's good when you can do both.
Excellent, yes.
Please God, you can. As a student consumer, we've been very torn because I'm absolutely 100% up the workers, but I'm also, I want a bloody refund.
Well, don't let me stop you. It may help the cause, it may not, but...
Well, that's what we think. We're going to try and put some pressure on the... we don't have a vice-chancellor, they're called master or something. But yeah, basically, we're going to say, look, we think the lecturers should get their pensions, sort this out and stop fannying about.
Yes, I think it's a paradoxical way of approaching it, but it's I can see where you're coming from. I think there may be some hope that it might work. And you get your money back as well. So that's great. Revolution and your money back. That's great.
Well, if they will treat me like a consumer, I'm going to behave like one. Yeah. Anyway, that was an interesting digression, but we are not here to discuss university politics, at least not until we cover a very peculiar practice, which I'm sure we will at some point. This month, what we thought we'd talk about, bringing us right up to date, is the four-part TV drama Collateral. Steve, do you want to outline what Collateral was all about?
Well, Collateral, as you said, is a four-part series, which was on the BBC, but will be on Netflix. So if you've missed it and listened to this podcast and think you want to watch it, despite what we may or indeed say about it, it will be out there at some point soon. Collateral the ambition of Collateral is to be a kind of state of the nation thriller, which is meant to encompass all different levels of society, from the gig economy and illegal immigrants that live on the edge, right up to vicars, MPs, members of the shadow cabinet, the police and security services. So it's very, very ambitious in its reach. And essentially, it starts off with a mystery, the death of a pizza delivery man. Why would anyone want to shoot that person? Who is this person? And it goes through the institutions of the Labour Party, the church, intelligence services, the army, the police. Have I missed anything out? And we end up with a resolution. And through the resolution, Sir David Hare, for it is he who has written this, his first four-part drama. He normally specialises in one-offs, particularly plays at the National Theatre, the occasional film. He kind of is making a statement, or has ambitions to make a series of statements about where we are in Britain at this moment in time in 2018. So I think I've done quite well without telling anyone the actual plot. But yeah, that's what it's about.
I mean, I think we have to sort of assume that spoilers are going to be part of our discussions. We can't really go in depth on these things without spoiling them. So listeners, if you haven't watched Collateral yet, now would be the time to stop this podcast, go and watch it, and then come back to join the conversation. Yes.
Because, by the way, if you do listen to this podcast, you may not wish to watch it afterwards.
Yeah. I mean, I think we're both of one mind that this was... It was a very ambitious drama that fell some way short of achieving its ambitions. It's possible that David Hare works better in a shorter medium. It was too soggy. It had too much to it that went nowhere, in my opinion. The central plot was a gripping police procedural. And then there was so much else that was bolted onto that that had absolutely no relevance, really, to the plot line. You know, it didn't intersect enough with the plot line to actually matter. Yes. So, for example, you had the lesbian priest whose girlfriend witnesses the shooting, the initial shooting that kicks all of this off, and girlfriend happens to be another illegal immigrant, as is the person who is shot. Who has overstayed her visa, which was signed by her local MP friend, played by John Sim.
And the pizza delivery was to his ex-wife, wasn't it, as well? The Labour MP's wife.
Yeah, so there's an awful lot of coincidence that brings all these characters into the plot and then just leaves them there. And you're kind of like, well, why do I care about this lesbian and her fairly moody girlfriend? What's the relevance to the central drama that is unfolding, which is quite, you know, there is an interesting storyline around the shooter, Sandrine, who is an army officer who is convinced by some fairly nefarious people to shoot this person who she's led to believe is a terrorist, but is in fact being shot because he's going to expose a human trafficking gang.
And she wants to kill the terrorist because her best friend, who she was, I don't know whether it actually says where they are on duty, but her best friend is blown to bits in front of her eyes by a terrorist, and a Muslim terrorist. So she's got this fixed idea she needs to take revenge.
Yes, she is open for the exploitation and is exploited in a number of ways. There is a subplot where her major is blackmails her into having he basically rapes her.
That plays no other role in anything, does it? It's just there's sexual harassment and it leads to that, you know, to the rape. But it plays no real other role in the non-integrated drama, because you would think that a state of the nation drama, and I keep saying state of the nation because that was what it was described as being. And David Hare specializes in these state of the nation dramas in frequent times. He did some plays in the 1990s. That were about the church, I think it was the army, but the Labour Party as well. The best, I mean, I should have started off by saying I don't have any issue with David Hare. I'm an admirer of some of David Hare's plays, and The Absence of War, which is based on Labour's 1992 election campaign, a dramatisation of the dilemma of a character very much like Neil Kinnock, is one of the best plays, pieces of fiction about politics, about the Labour Party, certainly at that time. So if Sir Dave is listening, I don't want him to think that I'm, you know, having a go at him. It's just this work. It's very unfortunate. But he specialises in state of the nation dramas that, a bit like the Victorians used to write in the middle of the 19th century, when they wanted to explore political and social ideas through fiction, because that's one way of getting people to think about ideas. They don't tend to read manifestos.
Absolutely, that's what we're here for.
And that's what we're here for, yes. What was the statement? I mean, where do all these things fit together? Where does the rape of this unfortunate army officer fit in with the wider commentary about where we are today? I didn't get that. It just seemed gratuitous.
Yeah, and it was very gratuitous, not least because we are, you know, given this plot line, a sort of a Me Too plot line about this woman, and then we are also given endless shots of her naked body. Just over and over again for completely no narrative purpose at all. Here she is having an upset in the shower so we can see her boobs. Here she is standing naked at the window so we can see her bum. Why? And I just felt like, oh my God, we're having an exploitation plotline whilst seeing this completely through an exploitation gaze.
It's something I do now recall thinking that's a bit odd, because we don't, I mean, I've seen more than my fair share of 1970s dramas, and David Hare contributed to some of those, where you would just, as a matter of fact, just get female nudity, not male nudity. Female nudity. And today we don't have that, and for very good reasons, I suspect. But yes, this play was very odd this series is very odd in the willingness for to expose at least the body of Sandrine. I don't know what that was meant to be saying about her as a person. I don't think it said anything other than we can now have a look at her boobs, frankly.
Yeah, I mean, she was a very vulnerable character. I think she was the most interesting character for me in the whole drama. She was definitely, her and the copper played by Carey Mulligan were for me the strongest people in the show, the best written. There were some really interesting...
We'll have an argument about that then.
Okay, interesting. Well, you didn't think the Carey Mulligan or the Sandrine was best written?
No, I think Sandrine was, yeah. And I think the Billy Piper character was potentially, at least, the most one of the two more interesting. I thought because the basic there were lots of characters, weren't there? That's one of the problems with the series. There are too many characters.
I mean, I you know, sometimes that can really, really work when you have one of those sort of dramas that have lots of different characters that are quite disparate. But it just no one felt that well painted.
No.
And I think a few of them were better painted than others. And Sandrine was definitely one of the best painted.
Yes.
But you, Carey Mulligan, you felt was less so.
Well, I'd maybe I've got a problem with her face, the actor's face. But she just seemed, because I've seen her in various things, and she just seems to pull the same face again and again and again when she wants to convey a certain degree of emotion. And in this particular, in this series, I mean, if there was a central character, it was the Carey Mulligan police officer, the investigating officer. She was, I mean, she had the elements of an interesting character. She was a police officer taking on her first major case as the lead officer. She was heavily pregnant, so that's interesting. Nothing is made of her being pregnant. I mean, apart from peripheral commentary, there's no significance about her being pregnant. She's just pregnant. Maybe that's the point. She was just pregnant. She is someone that used to be a teacher, and she's married. Why? That was mentioned. I don't know. She's married to a primary school head. Again, nothing is made of this. She talks to him once in a while. But then there's this thing about her being in her, you know, younger days. She was a pole vaulter. Who had an unfortunate accident when she pole vaulting, which was very painful for her, but everybody saw on YouTube and considers to be quite funny. That's mentioned a few times. And I'm thinking, why? Why do you keep talking about her being a pole vaulter? So, but principally, she was there to be the sympathetic heart. She's a police officer that wants to do the right thing. And in order to express that and be sympathetic, she pulls quite a few faces. But it's, you know, and this sympathetic, you know, pained kind of I'm listening and I'm empathizing face. And that after a while, it really annoyed me because it was the vacuity of the characters. You know, as I say, the elements of a potentially interesting character that were mentioned, but they're never pulled together and then explained.
Yeah. I mean, I think the pole vaulting thing was slightly better used than the ex-teacher thing, because she does use it to bond with one of the women who is in the asylum centre. Mm. So that kind of gave that a reason to exist, if you see what I mean. Yeah. You know, you can have a laugh at me, therefore you can trust me, kind of a thing.
Yeah.
Even though it turns out that she's absolutely going well beyond her remit in what she's promising this poor woman.
Mm.
I mean, I think a lot of the other characters, I felt the Billy Piper character, I didn't understand her at all. Why is she so angry with everything? And why won't, and if what you're exploring is her depression, explore it, you know, properly. Don't just have it as some sort of weird subsection of, oh God, how annoying, I have to go and deal with my depressed ex-wife again.
Yes. No, that's, no, you're right. I mean, again, she had the elements. I mean, maybe it's because I like Billy Piper. I don't know. that rather than Carey Mulligan.
What you're saying is that you prefer Rose to Sally Sparrow.
yes, I very probably am. But no, you're right. The Billy Piper character, who is the ex-wife of a Labour MP that we may wish to talk about a little bit, but and she's always drinking wine, she's always having a smoke, and again it's mentioned. Well, I was brought up in Beirut, and nothing is ever made of that. You know, maybe that has something to do with her rather, you know, her depressive character. I don't know, but there are these characters that have things mentioned about them, and maybe he's being very subtle and very clever, and I'm very thick and very obtuse. But why the very fact she was in Beirut, brought in Beirut? What's that got to do with anything? Why do you mention that? So potentially she was a very interesting character, I think, but you're right. It's underexplained.
And I think that just does seem to be, I think possibly again, the freedom of having 4 hours rather than, 2.5 hour play. David Hare may have slightly run away with that, put too much in, and then actually it all ended up underdeveloped, which is not his normal style, as far as I'm aware.
Well, no. I mean, I guess if you've got the discipline of having to do a play, you make sure that the things that you say, there's a purpose to them. that they all fit together, and you can have an all round theme. Whereas with this one, I guess if you said what is the theme or themes of Collateral, you'd be well, so it's something to do with immigration, something to do with immigrants, something to do with the place of immigrants in society and the way that we the British treat them. But it's done in such a flabby and often cliched way. Sir David thinks that the British don't treat immigrants as nicely as we might. That seems to be his basic point. But then he has characters, you know, as you mentioned, the gay vicar's Vietnamese girlfriend, who I'm not entirely sure whether we are meant to sympathise with the Vietnamese girlfriend, who's in the country on an illegal an illegal visa.
She overstayed
and then she had it renewed, so she's an illegal. When she's from Vietnam, she's a young woman, she's lesbian. Now, maybe that would be a case for her to try to get a leave to remain, but I just want to live in England. Well, lots of people want to live in England. Are we meant to think, well, anybody that wants to live in England should come and no borders? I mean, the MP, the John Sim character, Labour MP, gives a speech where he sounds off as if that's what he's kind of saying. I'm not entirely sure, but it's the theme of immigration. Well, it's there, but what are we meant to think? What is Sir David Hare saying really about this?
Yes, and yeah, there's it's sort of a combination of immigration and human trafficking. And it's basically all of the establishment are bastards and everyone else is under their yoke. The MI6, is it MI5 guy? I mean, he's such a caricature. You know, not even under the surface racist.
No, he says he's a racist, doesn't he?
Yeah.
Just in case you missed it.
Yeah, just in case it wasn't, you know, it was a bit too subtle for you. And then the various buffed and tuffed and types who run the army, who are also racist and involved in this human trafficking ring.
And rapists.
And then their vacuous wives who don't really care that they're rapists. And, you know, it just went on and on and on. And then the politicians who don't care, because actually we have to be really tough on immigration, tough on the causes of immigration. And, you know, the politics was just wacky in tone.
I think that's, yes, yeah. Yeah, I mean, given it was...
I mean, if we have a little listen now to a clip of an exchange between the John Sim character and his party leader.
You know what you're in for?
Can I get coffee?
No.
You've got one.
So? On no account piss me about. You've spent 4 days avoiding me.
There was a murder in my constituency.
Oh, and you can't multitask. Don't be a prick, David.
All right, if this is what you want to talk about. We have an immigration policy, which makes no sense.
That's for me to decide.
No, it's for you to listen to colleagues who respectfully disagree.
Wrong. Time for listening is over. We need to attract back all the people that hate us and get them voting Labour again.
It's called a free market, Deborah. Do you know what comes with a free market?
I think I do.
The free movement of people. You can't have one without the other.
What is this, civics class?
We're not going to be able to build hospitals, build schools, do any of the things that we need unless we have a dynamic economy. And that's never going to happen in a place called Fortress Britain.
This isn't your remit. You're Shadow Transport Secretary.
Thank you.
And I've heard it before.
All right. Yeah, let's just put the Labour Party aside for a few moments. What are we going to do for the next 300 years? Live behind walls? Is that a serious policy? Keep people out because we're rich and they're poor and that's the way it's going to stay forever? I don't think so. History tells us that's never going to work. The one thing we do know is that things change. They always do. So for God's sake, let's be open to that change.
No, I'm not going to do this. I'm not going to debate at 6 o'clock in the morning.
You chose the time, not me.
You say put the Labour Party aside. Well, then you may want to do that, but I can't. I'm riding a horse that's been shot through the legs, and all I care about is getting it up and running again, and I'll do anything to make that happen, including sacking you. You don't give any more interviews sounding sorrier for immigrants than for the people who've lived here 100 years. That's non-negotiable. You're all over the papers. If we hear nasty little country once more, you're out. I can get you deselected, and I'll do it too.
Well, that's very clear. Thank you.
I've tried to be clear.
You've succeeded.
I didn't want ambiguity.
There's none.
Good. And vote for unfettered powers for the security services tonight, along with the rest of the party.
Janet, meeting over?
It's over.
Quite apart from anything else, she's asking him to vote for unalloyed, I think it is the phrase she uses, powers for the security services. Like anyone would actually say that out loud.
Yes, even in the privacy of the leader of the opposition's office with a member of the shadow cabinet, of course not. But don't you think, I mean, this was very weird, that it's the state of the nation drama. And one of the main characters is a Labour MP who's in the shadow cabinet, whose position is that basically, you know, if immigrants want to come to the country, fair enough. We're being racist if we don't let people in. And he's got a very strong position. And the leader of his party, who is a woman, is doing the kind of what Ed Miliband was accused of doing, in terms of going UKIP on immigration. So the Labour Party that's being depicted in this drama of 2018 is not the Labour Party of Jeremy Corbyn at all.
No.
It's quite the reverse.
No, and I mean, I think there is, there are arguments about Jeremy Corbyn's approach to Brexit, his talk about freedom of movement, that have upset people who are more liberal on immigration. But that's not what's being portrayed here. This is very much a right-wing Labour approach,
yes,
to cracking down on immigration. It's absolutely seen as it's very pre-Corbynite. So the idea that this is state of the nation is 10 years out of date.
It's quite weird. And I just wondered if you thought, because when I first saw it, I thought the John Sim character, who is in opposition to his leader and takes a very kind of principled position on immigration and has got a little beard, is more smartly dressed than Jeremy. But he kind of is a bit of looking like Jeremy, and he's got a series of relationships which, you know, it's a string of failed relationships like Jeremy Corbyn has. I don't know if David Hare was making him out to be a kind of Jeremy Corbyn figure, but then he's got Jeremy Corbyn figure as being in opposition to the Labour Party leader, which as you were saying, it's weird to think of this as a state of the nation drama when that's the Labour Party that's being depicted.
No, I didn't really make him out directly as a Corbyn cipher.
No, not a cipher.
But I think he was more, I don't know, he was kind of your, he was the left Labour figure,
yeah,
that you got, but more mainstream left, I would say, than what the Corbynites were when the Labour Party was a bit more like this, if you know what I mean.
Yes, I mean.
So yes. I would say he's...
No, sorry, because you're absolutely right, because there's an argument he makes when he's interviewed on TV, which is a kind of almost a Blairite argument for not restricting immigration, because that's what you need if you're going to have an efficient economy. He's kind of a lefty Blairite. I mean, he's a mess, frankly, as a character in terms of his politics. And I don't understand why Hare did it this way.
And what statement are you making either about the politics of now, in which case all of those characters, if you're going to have an argument about how tough or not you should be on immigration, that should be done in the Conservative Party, surely. I mean, that is like Theresa May's MO. And there wasn't any Conservative Party as far as I could tell. Yeah, they went around running the country quietly in the background, but what mattered was this big row in the Labour Party, a row that was completely confected and doesn't reflect the current reality of the Labour Party. So it was like you've made up an internal Labour crisis that doesn't exist, and there are plenty of other ones you could have chosen from.
And if we pursued it, because I think, you know, in terms of the politics of it, this was the clearest expression of the confusion or the lack of clarity about, you know, if this is a state of the nation drama, what state are we in, Sir Dave? Is that he starts off, the Labour MP starts off, he's met what transpires to be a television journalist, and they've had three dates, and she's complaining that he's not seeing her enough because he's running around with the Labour Party, and she basically says to him, "It's pointless. I don't know why you're messing around with the Labour Party. You're not going to change anything because," she says, and this, for some reason I've got this quote in my head, "the system is the system. You can't change it," right? And at the end of the, so that starts it off, at the end of the series, he decides, because he's got this vote coming up, which is going to give all the powers the security services need, as his leader says, and she says, you better be there to vote. So he decides that he isn't going to be there with the vote. He's going to go off with this journalist and, you know, into the romantic sunset. And so he's putting his private, you know, affairs before voting, and he's kind of saying goodbye to his political career. He's kind of not. It's a very odd end for that kind of a character. I'm not quite sure what we're meant to take that. He's kind of privileging his private life.
I mean, do you think it was just an anti-politics message? A sod you all, you don't make any difference. I mean, that's quite reflects the mood of the nation.
Well, this is the interesting thing about David Hare, that he's often been critical about the Labour Party, or a certain kind of Labour Party. But he usually, in his plays, it's clear that he believes politics matters, that it can do things, that there are people who are worthy in politics. He is not an anti-politics dramatist. He's not somebody that jumps on the populist bandwagon. He's actually got a serious, he takes politics seriously. And yet the main character, who's an overtly political character, just essentially gives up and goes off with his girlfriend, who keeps saying, I want more of you, and you need to basically give up on the Labour Party. So it was a very odd end. But on the other hand, there is, because if we're talking about, as having read some reviews, we're meant to think about the series as being about the great institutions of our country and how people try to make them work. The gay vicar, when push comes to shove, she's given an ultimatum, isn't she, by her equally gay but very privately gay bishop, who says basically, you've got to dump you have to dump the Vietnamese illegal immigrant girlfriend, or we're going to have to let you go from your parish. And she has a sense of duty to her parish. She takes her duties very seriously as a priest. She basically lets the girlfriend go. So she puts her duty and her role before. Yeah. And so maybe that's meant to match what the Labour politician does, who basically seems to abandon his duty and go for private happiness. But again, it's there's so many characters, so messy, it's not that clear.
Yeah, I suppose in some ways it's like a kind of individuality versus communitarianism argument that's being played out, but not very clearly.
No.
And again, I just keep coming back to, I don't understand the politics of that vote. You know, the leader of the opposition is determined that her shadow cabinet have to vote in favour of increasing the powers of the security service, something that presumably has to be a government bill.
Yeah.
So would therefore pass overwhelmingly with the government's majority. And if the leader of the opposition is whipping it, there is no need for for this particular row to happen at all.
No, it's
it just doesn't make any sense.
It's kind of confected, isn't it? And again, the politics of it more generally are very odd, because a leader of the opposition who wants to whip their MPs to support the Conservative government's very generous legislation to give the security services all the powers they wish, that would be a classic New Labour thing. You know, we don't want to be seen to be weak on security. And yet we're in 2018, you know, we're some way beyond New Labour.
It's like we're writing this in 2003.
Yes, no, absolutely, absolutely. So it's really odd. I mean, I keep saying weird, odd and whatever. His depiction of the Labour Party, I think, suggests a certain archaic, anachronistic. I mean, if this is the state of the nation, when was it the state of the nation? It wasn't. It's not today.
In many ways, it sort of reminds me in a very odd way about the recent hat debacle. Have you been aware of Hatgate?
Well, maybe our listener has been living under a hat, and they don't know about all the fuss about how Newsnight did or possibly did not enhance Jeremy Corbyn's hat, so it looked like a Russian hat.
Yes. They changed Jeremy Corbyn's hat, a hat that is known as a linen hat, to look more Russian, apparently, according to the conspiracy theorists. And they're just the whole of the last weekend, instead of talking about the fact that, you know, three people attempted murder on British soil, probably by a Russian agent, we were talking about Jeremy Corbyn's hat and shouting at each other on Twitter about Jeremy Corbyn's hat. And that is where the state of our current politics is at. And in some ways, that's because people have not moved on. You know, I have never seen so many people on so many different sides refuse to accept that they've won. You know, the hard Brexiteers are determined to be paranoid about everything. The hard left, who completely control the Labour Party, were determined to be paranoid about everything. And in many ways, it felt like the same sort of thing. David Hare is just refusing to think that to accept that the Labour Party has changed. And he's written an anti-Blairite drama in Corbynite Times.
Bang on. Yeah, absolutely. That is exactly what he's done. But the other, right, so, but, you know, Emma, I understand you're a feminist.
I am indeed.
Now, you are indeed. And apart from the gratuitous nudity, which was questionable, were you not, I mean, I remember what, about, I don't know, it was halfway through the first episode, and I realised that virtually all the leading characters, apart from John Sim, maybe, they're all women. I mean, you know, they're all women. And then I thought, well, that's interesting because I've only just noticed.
Yes.
And it makes no difference.
No. That actually, you know, having torn the drama to bits, that is actually really a strong choice and something I felt was really good because it was so unremarked upon. And I want to pick up on something you said earlier because despite the fact that we were looking for the Carrie Mulligan character to be more fleshed out, the fact that her pregnancy was largely unremarked upon was remarkable in itself, actually. And that is a stronger dramatic choice. It was undermined by so many other things being unremarked upon. But in itself, I thought, great, you know, she's pregnant. She's getting on with her life. That's what people do.
Yes. And I guess that's kind of interesting because so far as Sir Dave's work in the past has been concerned, because he's in the 1980s and maybe into the 90s, when he was doing plays for the National Theatre about Thatcherism, he would always have, he'd usually have two characters, two female characters. One would be the hard-faced Thatcher character, and we're all meant to hate, who we're all meant to hate. And the other would be this kind of mumsy, sherry, carey kind of a woman, not carey.
Care in the community.
Something like that, but a nice version of caring in the community. But a kind of a more conventionally feminine character who we're all meant to like. And so he actually had quite stereotypical and frankly sexist ideas about how a woman should and shouldn't be. But in this, you know, after 20 years, he's caught on. These are characters, some of whom just happen to be women. As you say, one of them just happens to be pregnant, and it just doesn't really matter. I mean, the assassin is Sandrine, didn't she? I mean, you know, she's a female officer, you know, and it takes us a long time to work out she's in fact a woman because nobody seems to know who she is. But yeah,
we know from the start, but they don't.
Yeah, well, we kind of know by the end of the first episode, don't we?
Yeah.
For sure, yes, but they don't.
But she, you know, she's an interesting character. I mean, if I were to put my very, very staunch feminist boots on, I might say, oh, well, it was typical that she fell apart and couldn't cope with her PTSD because she's a woman and that's how they've depicted her. But actually, there are so many other strong women in the drama that I'm willing to give this the benefit of the doubt on that one. And, you know, actually, they're telling a story about PTSD and the abuse of officers by those in charge.
Yeah.
And this one happens to be a woman. So I genuinely give them a pass on that. It was a strong female-led drama. that seems to be the flavour of the month in police procedurals.
Of course.
If you think about all of the ones that are coming along, you know, they are often led by strong women, you know, Sarah Lancashire or Suran Jones, you know, these people. And so I think in many ways it was reflecting trends in current drama as much as it was reflecting David Hare's journey towards actually understanding the multifaceted aspects of women.
So, but he has. So that's good. Well done, Dave. Yes. So that it's nice. I don't know, you know, if you've got anything else to say, but it's always nice to end on a tick.
End on a
bum note.
It felt flabby. Yeah. It didn't feel like 4 hours worth of drama. There was a core of a good drama in there, but there was too much bolted on. Yeah. So, you know, it was watchable. But I felt like it could do with a bloody good edit.
And there was some ambiguity. It wasn't as clear cut as maybe. I mean, it was in some elements that were clearly who was good, who was bad. But and whether this was something that was quite deliberate, I suspect it was. The Kerry Mulligan's character, who of course was the good character, her colleague, the other detective, who would come out with vaguely racist kind of things occasionally, questioning her liberality. He was black. Now, whether that was done deliberately or they just cast a black actor, I don't know. But that kind of undercut some things. It made things a bit more complicated. But then at the very, very heart of the plot, which was about the reason why, spoiler alert, the reason why the guy had to be assassinated was because he knew who the people traffickers were, and they were British. And the reason why the security services went along with it is because they could then find out who the terrorists were who were coming over to Britain, because they had an agent implicated with the people traffickers. So the question was, should they have stopped the people traffickers in their tracks, or should they have kept going to find out who was coming into the country, some of whom would be terrorists? So it was kind of a bit grey in terms of the security services and their motivation, I think.
Yeah. Yes, and it's kind of depicted some of the tougher choices they make. So it wasn't like, it wasn't 100%, yeah, as you say, black and white. It just, again, it could have done so in a little bit more, with a bit more clarity, a bit more focus on that, as opposed to the whole subplot of the Church of England.
I completely agree.
Great. Okay, well, we're now in danger of agreeing furiously, so I think it's probably time to wrap this up. Thank you once again, Steve, for a fascinating discussion. Listeners, please get in touch with us. We are at ZT Podcast on Twitter. If you've got any suggestions of what you would like us to cover next, perhaps something we might enjoy a little bit more than Collateral, that would be great. please do get in touch. Please also remember to rate and review us on iTunes if you've enjoyed this. We really appreciate it, and it does help other people to find the podcast. And just finally, it behoves me to say that this has been a Political Human production.